Hey everybody, and welcome back to the EV Cafe Takeaway Podcast. That podcast is focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for. And it's always good to have one of the wonderful members of the EV Cafe team to join me as we interview the great and the good. And that is John Curtis this week. John, welcome.
Thank you, my dear chap. Do you know what? Unusually, I'm a little tired of our guest.
Oh,
see what I did there?
Yes. Well, I'm so glad that you're along for the cheese, because you know. But we might have to tread carefully with this one. But anyway, we'll see. We'll see how we go. But this week we are truly blessed to be joined by a wonderful innovator, pioneer, and collaborator, globally recognised, and well. Friends with royalty. Anyway, G from Enso. G, full name being Gunnlaugr Lars. And tell us what your full name is.
Yeah, sorry for that. So my full name is Gunnlaugr Pétur Erlendsson, and I blame my parents for that one.
Oh, isn't that fabulous? Do that again.
Do it again with full accent.
Gunnlaugr Pétur Erlendsson.
So many Brilliant. Rolled R's. Isn't that beautiful?
Yes. Even some of the R's are silent in addition to the rolled ones.
There's hidden R's. Unbelievable. And we're friends now, aren't we? So you're G to your friends. And we've known each other a little while now. Which has been it's been great to get to know you. We were introduced to you by the lovely Sam Clark. Another member of the EV Cafe team. And this was a few years ago, and we started talking about tyres. And we're thinking, with the EV Cafe, why are we talking about tyres? Just tell us a little bit about why Enso became a thing and what you aim to do with Enso, and then we can get into all of the fun stuff.
Sure, no problem. So, Sam and I go way back. Even prior to EV Cafe being launched, I remember the first podcast and the first launch you guys ever did. So, we set up
commiserations.
Yeah, why is he not here? Ultimately, Enso was really set up for one singular purpose. We want to make electric cars more successful. We want to extend their range, reduce the pollution that comes off their tires, and ultimately save costs every mile, both on your energy bill and your tire bill. And that's really the genesis of the Enso.
Why? Why do you care?
Because it's important for both the advent of electric vehicles that we make them run better, and it's important for our environment that we reduce this pollution that comes off the tire. And we have the option and the obligation. I've been in this industry now for close to a decade and a half, and when we set up Enso, it was really because we had access to all this really clever technology that just wasn't hitting the market and wasn't really being implemented for electric cars. And we said, look, if nobody else is going to do it, we might as well. That's how we started Enso back in the day.
But, I mean, look, for most of us, and before I knew you, I didn't really know that tyres, and brakes actually, as an aside, but tyres are a major source of pollutant, and I think it's the PM2.5. Am I got that right?
Yeah.
Help me with that.
Yeah, so tires wear down, I know, and it has to go somewhere. And so here in the UK, for example, the Environmental Agency published a report 6 years ago that said already back then we were breathing more PM2.5 and PM10, which is particulate matter of a certain size that can go through your lung streams. And in some instances, in 2.5, it kind of goes through your blood-brain barrier. So the tire particles even go to your brain. So we're exposed to more airborne tire pollution than airborne tailpipe pollution, according to DEFRA. Now, so that means that despite the fact that back in the late 2018s and 19s, we were still running all these dirty diesel cars on the streets with all these dirty tailpipes, the tires was a bigger component of air pollution back then. And what was interesting is that we've spent 50 years legislating tailpipes, and there is no real law against making a bad tire. And so ultimately, we are trying to combat this when it comes to electric vehicles because we want to make them more efficient, on one hand, these vehicles, and we want to make sure that the tires doesn't contribute as much to the environment. We won't make the tire last forever, let's be clear on that, but we can make them last a lot longer.
Have you always made tires, or is this something new?
It's we set up Enzo in 9 and a half years ago. And before that, I had worked on other tire-related projects. Before that, I was in private equity and venture capital. It's rare, and I think what triggered me was my insane appetite for kind of absorbing scientific and data, basically. And you don't really. There's not many access points to get into the tire industry, to be frank about it. It's a very closed down industry. There's a handful of big companies that kind of dominate the discussion. But I kind of accidentally kind of got airdropped into this. And what I found on the inside of this was how fascinating these products are, but also how environmentally impactful they are,
yeah,
are already, and nobody's talking about it. And that's what we are here to do.
I've got to say, the way that you've just articulated there, it's almost like that we should turn this whole thing on its head and worry more about tyres than we should about the diesel and petrol vehicles on the road. Well, because it's crazy.
It is crazy. I think the tyres, until Dieselgate happened, tyres were completely overlooked when it came to air pollution studies or microplastic studies or toxicology studies or you know, the only thing people talked about was a sheer amount of waste that we were generating on the planet. You know, we make 2 billion tires on this planet every single year to accommodate 1.5 billion vehicles that are driving on it. And, you know, our whole economy runs on tires. You know, without moving stuff around, we don't have an economy. And so tires are like this most fundamental overlooked item that people kind of just say it's black, it's round, it has a hole in the middle, and they're all the same. But it isn't really the case.
It's absolutely not the case. Let's geek out a bit, G. Let's talk tyres, because I'm a bit of a, I do like a good tyre. Now, what is different about your tyres? What have you fundamentally changed in the makeup of the tyre to improve its environmental performance?
So we basically use high-grade raw materials and special chemistries, special recipes that we embed into the design of the tyre, particularly on the tread. And we engineer that to be highly efficient and highly durable. We produce them in brand new factories. We're a bit like Apple. We design the products. We work with contractual partners to manufacture them at the moment. But we're also looking to develop a factory in the United States, which is a very active pursuit we have at the moment, particularly because of the focus now to make more in America. So we have an interesting story in the sense that, you know, most people who enter this industry kind of enter at the bottom of the pile and then work their way up. And we've decided to kind of do it completely in reverse. We started to build a brand. We started to focus on the R&D. We then focused on the initial prototypes, which we ran with large electric vehicle fleets with the Mayor of London. Our initial commercial solutions were actually for the London Electric Taxi, where we're now aggressively selling those tires, making sure that every cab makes more money effectively when he goes back home. And, you know, we're rolling into commercial vans, you know, the 40 Transits, the Mercedes E-Sprinters. And most recently, of course, we launched our premium range for high-performance vehicles like Tesla 3, Tesla Y, Jaguar I-Pace. And ultimately, you know, what we're doing is telling the story that you can improve these products, even if you're a small company such as us.
So you've got better wear statistics than traditional tyres, designed from the ground up. And I guess G is the man who's reinvented the wheel in some regards, but...
Lower rolling. I'm trying to keep count.
You know, it's a stock in trade. It's what I do. And you've also reduced the rolling resistance, I guess, to make them more efficient.
Yes.
Have you been able to crack the most difficult nut to crack, which is the one about recycling and what happens at end of life with your tires?
Yeah. A very good question. So with recycling at the moment, what we do is we partner with recycling companies that take our tire back at the end of life. We, for example, have a partnership with Wastefront, which is building a tire recycling plant up in Sunderland. We've actually already made tires with their raw material, which we put in the field at a very high concentration already. So what we have done is we partner with many of these raw materials, suppliers, recycling companies, and others to really both enhance their business case and ours at the same time, and it's very kind of collaborative. What drives that, of course, is that we don't have really a legacy hurdle like the traditional tire companies to think things in a very traditional way. So we partner and have this thing called what we call an open innovation platform, where we work with different providers at all parts of the value chain in the tire industry. And our goal is very, very simple in the sense that, you know, we believe that if we are to combat tire pollution in particular, we need to make fewer tires on this planet. We need to make them last longer. Now, if you double the durability of a tire, you would halve the pollution of that tire because it simply lasts twice as long. Now, the problem is that we're in an industry that is addicted to churn, a bit like the old light bulb industry. You know, they use too much energy, they break way too often, and don't last very long. So, we are trying to change not just the product, but also the business model. And this is also when we work directly with electric vehicle fleets in particular. We're equipping our tires directly to that fleet. Now that gives us two benefits in the sense that we can then sell that product to them at an affordable price with this high performance that we deliver. But we're also then able to get back from those fleets data. That data is very valuable for us because we use that data to further improve the product. So it's a kind of continuous innovation cycle between our customers and us, where we work together to enhance their fleet operations and reduce costs and the overall impact while we drive this innovation forward. And that's really the secret of Enzo, is this open innovation and this willingness to think differently.
It strikes me as, once again, we've got a live example of somebody spotting a problem in the market and coming up with an innovative solution that is born almost in, well, not entirely, it's born in your mind, but like collaboration is critical to moving it forward. And it just seems like the people that really wake up to these facts make that incredible difference. And is that, would you put your experience down to that fact that, that collaborating and solving problems is what makes the business work?
I would say the first and foremost is we were born electric. So we're the only premium brand in the world that was founded this century. So there are not many times when a premium tire company comes into the market, let alone the fact that we're a brand new premium tire company, we're a brand new EV-only focused tire company, meaning that we don't have to compromise because we have to serve a vast multiple of masses. We don't have to focus on, you know, the legacy autos that are in the field. We just focus on the future. And that's, I think, what has given us a lot of benefit. The other thing, of course, is that the team around Enzo, it isn't me. We have a vast and growing team that is basically supporting us, that comes mostly from the industry. These are individuals who have in their own way worked for some of the premium tire manufacturers. And I would say that to some extent, you know, they realize how backward the industry is, but it's very hard to change a legacy industry, not just because it's got legacy factories and legacy distribution, not just because they're listed on stock exchanges and run a business model that's focused on churn, but, you know, any large organization to change is very difficult until you kind of have a disruption event. And I often say that while, you know, the disruption is partially, of course, the product being more innovative and focus on driving that collaborative aspect, but I think it's really focused on how we change the selling of tires and work directly with fleets to enhance their operations. And I think that it's strange to this day. I would think that the tire industry would have reacted in a different way as we came to the market. But as they say, sometimes they just ignore you and then you win, I guess. But ultimately, the way that we've been putting ourselves out there is really about how do we make our customers better off? That's ultimately the case. And our customers are the vehicle owner, the vehicle operator, but also the environment itself.
I mean, it's a great philosophy, isn't it? You know, how do we make our customers better off? I mean, that's wonderful. And I'm thinking, so, because I'm just trying to get my head around, because obviously the CO2 or the particulate matter that is released into the atmosphere, is that's materially lower with your tire. Is that right? And the vehicle is more efficient.
Yes.
With your tire. Those are the two key areas, right?
The key thing is the tire industry wants to kind of usually has the mantra of saying, oh, we can't change anything because of safety. Well, if that's the case, then why are there so many bad tires out there that can't stop in the rain? The tire industry then often says, oh, we can't make it more efficient and more durable while maintaining that safety. We've done that. We've done that with our first generation products, and we have novel innovation that's coming down the line, which will further improve both the efficiency and durability as well. Ultimately, the tire you see here behind me, this is for the Tesla 3, one of the most popular cars on the planet. It's the most popular tire size in the world when it comes to electric cars, this one. This is a 235 R18. It's been on the Tesla 3 since they first sold one. And so we have now got this tire certified at a AA level rating. Now, what does that mean? It's A in energy efficiency. It's A in safety. It's also highly durable. And ultimately, when we deploy this in partnership with operators such as Uber, who we have a strategic partnership with, it means that the Uber driver driving this, he's in his car, he's working, he's 8 hours there, back and forward, picking up people. He ultimately uses less electricity every mile. So you can look at that as, hey, I got more range. But you can also simply look at it, hey, I don't have to spend as much on electricity while I do my job. And what's been interesting in the deployments we have is that the biggest benefit, particularly here in the United Kingdom, where electricity prices are very high, is that the cost savings on the electricity bill are sometimes big enough to pay for the set of tires. So ultimately, the benefit for that operator, whether it's a fleet or taxi driver, Uber driver, or anyone else, is that we're trying to lower their cost per vehicle per mile. And that's achievable if you start to think about it in the way that we approach the industry. The issue, of course, is that the tire industry itself is a very complicated beast and has multiple intermediaries here. There's so many SKUs or tire sizes and features. We try to simply simplify that and just give the customer the best option we can possibly deliver.
Can I pick your brains?
Go for it.
You mentioned briefly that you worked in private equity, and that fascinates me. The financing of transport is hugely problematic, and we've seen a number of big companies coming with vehicles and product that were superb, groundbreaking, from the ground up, designed for purpose, lots of customer research, and they failed. Mm-hmm. Have you got any sense of why it is so hard to break through in the transport industry when you seem to have all of your ducks in a row?
I would say the ones that have been successful at innovation in the transport industry are the ones that have decided to own a full stack or the whole value chain, in other words, meaning that not just looking at the product, but also how it's distributed and looking to own as much of the customer relationship as possible. This is what we do. This is what Tesla does and why Tesla was successful. They didn't just say, we're going to make a good car and sell it through a bunch of dealers who don't want to sell it. We're going to sell it directly, and we're going to build that ecosystem that wants to see this happen. And again, by being initially niche, they then conquer the market. I mean, the world's number one vehicle sold on the planet last year was not the electric vehicle, just car, was the Tesla Y. So, you know, so you have a situation where, you know, the future is here already because of that. But ultimately, you know, you have to win the niche. We often say internally, we want to win the vertical. We focus on narrow use cases, high mileage vehicles, particularly like taxis and vans. And now with the range of high performance tires, we're able to tackle Uber drivers. And that means that we can really focus on enhancing their experience and reducing their costs and drive uptake. But it also means that we're now available for everyone. You can now go on multiple websites here in the UK and buy our tires if you own a Tesla particularly. And we'll have more and more ranges coming later this year for most other common electric vehicles. So the what's interesting here is that we are not for everyone. And I think if you dilute your rollout where you try to do too much in the beginning, you end up not succeeding. You try to be for everyone and you're actually in the end for nobody because you can't succeed in your scale up. And I think the challenge in the transport industry, of course, is also this is very capital intensive, you know, because and we've gone through financial disruptions regularly. I mean, who doesn't remember Liz Truss? And so, you know, you have a situation where, you know, your business model that you may have built suddenly gets disrupted because of war in Ukraine or whatever else that comes around the corner. And it's really hard. I think transport itself, and this is interesting, when you really look at the profitability for most of the car makers don't make any money. And it's really hard as a car maker to really be profitable. There are few, but they are few in the overall. But when you look at transport that hangs on all of that as well, it's often really a challenging business. So minor changes in the environment can have a massive effect. Where we sit, we are, on the other hand, in that part of the ecosystem that is always, there's always a need for tires. You don't have a choice. You have to buy them when the MOT is out or any other reason when you have a nice pothole to deal with. So you have a situation where it's not like, oh, I'd like to go to buy some tires today. You know, it's rare to find people who are really into that. It's a distress purchase. It's a hygiene item, someone said once. I think ultimately, you know, tires are not a sexy object that people aspire to, but it's basically the bedrock of everything that moves. So without them, you're not going anywhere. We just focus on making those four corners better than they were before you came and met us.
Love that. Love that. Now, I'm really interested to understand, G, what was the breakthrough for you? What was the commercial deal that you did where you knew you'd got it right and you had that moment of, yes, come on?
That's a good question. I mean, I think there are two moments really where we kind of realized that this was not a fly by night in the sense that, you know, we were on a path that we had validation and commercial success. I think the validation piece, of course, was when we were nominated and became a finalist for the Urshot Prize with Prince William. That itself was a catapult. I mean, I think that was also because we were the only tire company willing to talk about tire pollution in the world. It's not a topic that any of the majors want to even address in any format. And of course, we're both highlighting a problem and bringing a solution to it. So that, I think, was a big factor in why we were honored that way. I would say that what followed, for example, we recently signed a strategic partnership with Uber, which is global. That means effectively that we can now work with some of the highest use cases in the world, these intensely driven vehicles. You can imagine that they're zipping up and down highways in California, delivering their customers at a, you know, over 8 or 9 hours at a 50 miles an hour thing. But that means that the consumption of tires that they go through is through the roof. And it's increasing their operational costs. So when we got Uber, which was partially also driven by our affiliation with Prince William and the Urshot Prize, that was really kind of like the commercial catalyst, I think, where we said to ourselves, we have arrived. I think that was the validations, the commercial validation. But of course, the impact validation came a little bit before that. So that, I think, would be probably the standout moments in 2023 and 2024. But ultimately, I would say that, you know, we have people coming to us now on a regular basis who want to work with us, even from within the industry. And again, if you asked me 9 years ago, would I expect some major players to want to work with us in the industry? I would have said, there's no way. I think what's changed is this. Customers are unhappy. The EV owners generally are unhappy, and they think that they should get better products. And I think once you've experienced the pain when it comes to, you know, tires and electric vehicles, you 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 seek a solution. And I think that that has now reverberated in the industry, not to the extent that the tire industry is going to change overnight. I mean, again, they make over 2 billion tires a year. EVs are a small fraction of that number. But you can hear it like from the distributors is that they are saying, look, my customer's unhappy. And if my customer's unhappy, then I should be happy. But I want to find a better solution. So I would say that we are quite lucky in the sense that some of these leading, I would say, forward-thinking partners are coming to us and want to work with us. So there'll be more of that coming out this summer, highlighting particularly when we roll out in the United States. But ultimately, that's really the signpost for the future is really, you know, how do we focus on the vehicles that drive the most, save us most energy, reduce as much carbon implication from energy generation, reduce as much air pollution and microplastics, and reduce the waste at the end of life, and then ultimately simply reduce costs at every level as well. And I think that that's the winning formula, is that when you combine a cost-saving exercise with an improvement on the operations at the same time. But of course, it's hard within the traditionals to do that.
And so exciting to see the journey that Enso are on. And I was genuinely thrilled when I saw you nominated for the Earthshot Prize. And maybe you can what's he like?
Yeah, older than
he seems like a really nice guy.
He's really tall.
Is he right?
He's really tall. See, they don't warn you that one. They give you the protocol. Which you immediately break because you forgot it as soon as they told you that. It's like, you know, but they don't warn you how tall he is. So when he shows up, he's a wonderful person, and I think that, you know, when he gets interested in something, it's a great validation for what the team has pulled together. It's a great validation of what we're looking to do. And of course, he is with the Earthshot Prize. What he's doing is pulling together, you know, the Jeff Bezoses, the Bloombergs, the Bill Gateses on one hand. He's pulling together industry partners like Uber, who we're working with, and others. And he puts them all in a room and says, you know, I'm here to get you guys in a room, now start talking. And that is a great catalyst for us because it gives us an immediate, I would say, global network for funding, for scaling, for partnering. But I would say that it's almost like belonging to a family. Once you are in the ecosystem, it's not like it only lasts a single year and you're out. It's more like we're constantly every year adding people to our family. And we were quite lucky, I would say, that we were nominated quite early in the Earthshot process. So, you know, we've seen it nurture and grow. And I think that what's great about it is that he kind of keeps us on our toes to continuously push forward every single year and show more and more results on the ground. And so you can see how catalytic it has been for the finalists to get through this, is that, you know, the relationships you build in year one may not capitalize until year three, but when they do, they surely hit the numbers. And that's really exciting. And that's what makes it different from any accelerator program or incubator or any other program or, you know, we have been nominated for or won in the past. This is quite a unique thing, and it's only a few UK companies. But it's only a few UK companies that has actually ever gotten into this as well. So it's a global enterprise.
Yeah, and what was the how did that happen? You know, because like you mentioned, you were nominated. Because in most cases, people put themselves forward for this sort of stuff. How did it happen? How did it all you get on that journey?
Yeah, I was. So we were originally nominated by Cranfield University because we had collaborated with them on projects looking at the science behind tires and tire pollution, and we heard nothing, like nothing. So we were like, that was like 2022. Nothing happened. Nothing. Nobody called us. No tap on the shoulder. Anything. And we're like, okay, great. I didn't even think of it. I was then a friend of mine, Sammy Fry, who runs the climate program at TechNation, which I would say is also a great program here in the UK to focus on companies that are tech enabled. You know, number of mobility focused companies here in London and the UK have been through that Tech Nation program as well, and it's fantastic. And he tapped me on the shoulder and say, I'd like to nominate Enzo. And I said, well, we were nominated last year, but we didn't get it through. I said, okay, but let's, you know, let's let me do this. And we did. And then something starts to happen. They kind of start to tap you on the shoulder and say, you know, there's a review and there's a due diligence process. And then they ask you more questions. And you kind of go through more due diligence than any investor has ever given us, which was a bit interesting. I'm sure they do a security screening on you also on the back end without telling you. How would I know that? I don't know. But ultimately, there's a process that is quite an intense process. And of course, that goes on for almost 6 months and you can't tell anyone what's going on. And then, of course, they happen in the end of that process to send the 5-person film crew to follow you around the office. And you still can't tell anyone what's going on, which is interesting, for 3 days. And then eventually, of course, there's the big announcement, and that was fantastic. We did it at the Plaza in New York, and we got, again, more PR than we could ever have dreamed of from all the major media all around the world. And then, of course, you know, it kind of runs its course. And it's been one of those really engaging processes. But it's, you know, it is a very robust process. And when you then see who else is nominated with you, you just kind of you think to yourself, my God, this is a different world.
Yeah. And it's lovely because I've got awards up here. There was no due diligence process for me, I have to say.
We just celebrated by making polos. We just did the polos afterwards. This we did with a partnership with Uber. Quite so, right. You know, and so, you know, we made polos and we appreciated that. But I think that what's good about us is, like, you know, we make tires. It's easy to understand to some extent because, you know, I think, but the problem is that on one hand, the product itself is strikingly easy to understand in visual terms, but the impact that we're trying to address is something nobody talks about. Mm. And so you have this thing here and then that thing, which is basically, you know, represents what a single tire will wear throughout its life. And nobody's
so,
talking
Gene,
about
just,
that.
Just so that, just 1 second. So he's, for those of you that are listening in your cars and wonder what's he talking about in the background, he's just fetching it to the foreground for us now and showing us 1.5 kilos in a box, which of something that looks like quite probably rubber given the context of the conversation. Tell us a little bit about that box and what it is in it.
Yeah, so this cube here represents a kilo and a half of tire pollution. And this is what an average tire will wear throughout its life. Now, you know, we can't make the tire last forever. We just make it last longer. But what we want is to delay the emissions of the tire into our environment. But that means also that you need to buy fewer tires. And ultimately, this is the conflict that the tire industry has, because the tire industry just wants to sell you more products as a fundamental principle in how the industry works. And this is the conflict. And this is the same conflict we had before we had electric vehicles, because initially the car industry said, look, we can't make these cars. We don't have the technology, or the technology is too expensive. Well, no longer. The key thing is how do you catalyze that early entry into the market that allows you enough traction, enough success to scale? And that's really where we're at, this inflection point at the moment, right now, moving from the UK to the US. And I think ultimately, you know, highlighting the problem is also how we highlight the solution.
Gee, you've talked very positively, as you always do, about your growth and how you've developed your products and your team. But every entrepreneur knows that there are difficult days, there are dark days, and there are days when you must wonder, what the heck have I done? Can you tell us about your push through those dark days? How do you do that? How do you motivate yourself to keep going?
Good question. Being stubborn helps a lot. And that it's not really a solution to it, but it does help. I think you have to think this way. I had a conversation recently with someone about luck. People say, oh, you got very lucky. Well, you have these moments where you think to yourself, if I just can hang on for another day, it's another day for me to get lucky. And so in the early days of Enzo, there were many moments where we thought, okay, this just isn't going to run or isn't going to roll. It's not going to get the traction. See, three puns there.
He's good. He is good. You can join the team, my friend.
You should score these, by the way. So ultimately, you know, when you have those dark days, it's back to the grind. You're grinding all the time. And as you're creating something new, you're continuously, you know, carving a path that isn't there. And I think that you have to approach it with a bit of tenacity, a lot of optimism, but you also have to have that kind of grit in you. And I think belief in the solution, I think the fact that we've had access to the technology for this time gave us that confidence from a technological standpoint. We're in the game. I think the key question has always been about how do you then scale? Because what's interesting as well in the process of building a business such as Enzo is that you suddenly hire people that are a lot smarter than you, people who are able to achieve things. And to some extent, if you let them just run with it and don't try to control the process too much, that I think also is a very simple. You have to empower your team. And it's interesting as a founder when you switch from running your whole shop and to empowering the team to take these decisions. And I think that the founder, and this is also something I tell people when they ask me, is you need to stay in the game to be lucky, but you also need to let go of the steering wheel on occasion so that others can take charge who know the route better than you do. And in the end, I would say that you just stay optimistic. It just kind of works. And I think it's kind of what you put out in the world as well. It's, you know, also if you put out, you know, to projects that you're working on, hey, can we just do this? And being very open to people. People are very honest with you and people embrace that.
Yeah. Gee, I mean, we've met a couple of times in person and always when you're on the phone, there's that smile. There it is right there. So for anybody not watching, check out the, it's that smile, that cheeriness, that optimism that you've touched on that often is the bedrock of tenacity and vision and all of those good things. Where does this come from? Because, I mean, obviously you didn't just appear at whatever ridiculously young age you are. But in comparison to me and John, that
intelligent,
is.
Intelligent, good-looking and young. And God, I hate
bloody
him.
Bloody young. I mean, fucking... Anyway, but going back to my question, it is... Obviously, is it nature? Is it nurture? What is it that happened as you were growing up that brought this bloke that we see in front of us to life? What gave you this engine room that is fabulous?
Well, I think that we all kind of live in a box and you've got kind of got walls around you. When I was a kid, I was always kind of poking at the walls and pushing those walls further and further and further. And you discover, if you allow yourself to be a bit bold at an early age, that those walls are not real. You can push yourself in any direction you want, up, down, and sideways. I think ultimately, you know, I come from Iceland originally, which is a weird place to begin with. That helps. being incredibly madly optimistic is an additional benefit too. But I think, you know, the essence is that I didn't start out this way necessarily when I was young. I just kind of kept pushing myself. And I think that as well as kind of probably a small addiction to hard work and stress is probably something that all kind of combined to make me as insane as I am today. But ultimately, you know, from my side, you know, this you know, and I keep going back to it. You know, the Enzo is not successful because of its crazy founder who has a shelf life. It's really about, you know, the team around it, the products we make, and how our customers embrace them. And I think that gives you also energy. I mean, when you have a happy customer and a really loyal fan base from your customer perspective in these niches that we target, it's just phenomenal. And it just feeds you. But, you know, I enjoy it. And I think if you do something you enjoy, it's not really work, of course.
That's what they say.
It's so very true. Now then, when you stop and you think about all of the things you've achieved in life, what are you going to remember most? What's the thing that so far you say is your standout moment where you just think, yeah, I got it right there?
I don't know. That's a tricky one.
Okay, let's ask a different question.
Go for it.
G has an unexpected day off. There's no work. There, you can't go in and do your emails and see the cleaning lady. You have to go and do something. How do you spend your day not working?
Well, I spend my days with my dog. So I have a lovely dog and we're in the park every morning, like before almost anyone else shows up in the park. And you have a wonderful experience both in the mornings and the evenings. And you remember to switch off. It's incredibly important. Otherwise, you're just constantly working and thinking, and it's not productive. So, you know, I spend my days, you know, running around the parks of London with my little Maximus.
And so Maximus is a what sort of dog?
He's a Manchester Terrier. The Manchester Ooh. Terrier, which, let's see if I can grab a photo here. They are the only dog of the industrial age, basically. So Maximus basically, it's fun fact, only dog with a royal warrant for rat catching. The Manchester Terrier was usually used by called the Gentleman Terrier. It was the oldest terrier in the UK. And we used to have two of them. One of them died recently, sadly, but this is what they look like.
Oh, wow. Yes.
Uh-huh. So I would call them the English Toy Terrier.
They're a little bit bigger. They're a little bit bigger than that.
Yeah. Oh, okay. A little bit bigger than the English Toy Terrier. Yeah, because the Toy Terriers, like I would call them the mini Dobermans.
They are the precursor to... Yeah, if you mix this with Doberman, you can make your own Doberman. It's the precursor. It's where the Doberman gets its coloring from, is from this dog. And what happened, this is the only dog who had a major career change because they were originally bred for killing vermin, and then ultimately they became the dog of the Industrial Revolution in Manchester. So all the factories in Manchester would have them because they were tenacious little brats and they would find everything. So they were really popular, but you know, the breed almost disappeared. So we were thinking of getting a dog. We were in the dog show and suddenly someone walks in and we go, oh, it's a puppy Doberman. And it's like, no, it's a Manchester Terrier. And then you kind of go, okay, great, how do I get one? Well, you can't, because they're so rare. So you're like, okay. And then suddenly a very kind woman called me one day and said, I have one for you, and you got to take it now. And I said, yeah, great, I'll take it. It's been
fantastic,
wonderful, disruptive 12 years later. Alongside developing my company, I've been developing my love of the breed and my little Max.
Maximus.
Does Maximus have Amazing. Other names? Do you have shorter names or different names that you call him?
Well, his father was Spartacus. So we wanted a dog called Spartacus. So we had to then call the other one Maximus. And we used to have two, but Sparty left. So we had Sparty and Max, yes. But ultimately, you know, this thing goes everywhere with us. So it's a lovely little thing. And I think that also the love that a dog will show its owner and just the affection that it brings is just absolutely
so
the best ever.
So
and, you know, I can spend my days working or not working. I cannot spend my days without my dogs.
Oh. But listen, we wouldn't be a podcast of any stature at all without a relatively closing tradition. And as part of our tradition, we provide you with something that can make a difference. And that is, the Eevee Cafe magic wand. And so there you go. It's got the lightning bolt on it just here. And I'm going to pass you now the magic wand. So it's coming in your direction. Fresh, not from Harry Potter, but so here we go. There you go. It's coming to you. And that's it. There you go. You've got it. Right. So you've got the magic wand. You now get one wish. And you get to spend that wish in doing something wonderful for your industry, you, your world, whatever. So what would you like to see that needs a little bit of magic deployed to make it happen?
I'd like the rest of the industry to follow our lead. I would like them, because in the end, we're not going to make every tire on the planet. We're not going to make 2 billion tires at any given moment in the future. The largest tire company in the world, Michelin, only makes 12%. So it's not just us that need to show that the industry can change. We need followers. We need the rest of the industry to go this direction. We need regulation to, you know, take out the worst actors. But ultimately, we need the change, because otherwise we're not going to address the air pollution microplastics. We're not going to reduce the cost to the drivers. We need to admit that EVs are highly efficient animals, and they should be kept at that level with better products. And I think that ultimately that would be my wish. And going forward, I of course wish, you know, my people ask me, what do you want out of Enzo? And I say, well, I want Enzo to be, of course, incredibly successful in his own right. I like to be blamed for that a little bit. And then ultimately, I want the rest to follow us as well, because if we all move in the same direction, that itself is the success. It's not a individual effort, and I'm not here to... We didn't set up Enzo because we wanted to be wildly rich. We just wanted to be wildly successful.
I think it's a thing of beauty. A thing of beauty. And I think we've learned... Well, I'll put my hand up and say I've learned a hell of a lot today. Learned that you were a thoroughly decent fella, and I'm very glad that we've been introduced to you. Learned that... You know, 2 billion tires on the road. Holy smoke, that's a lot of 2 billion times 1.5 kilos.
Yes,
that's. I mean, just kind of. I mean, there's.
Well, that's just that. That's just the tires we make every year. The tires that are running on the streets today is closer to 6 billion tires on the planet running today. Because you got 1.5 billion cars times four.
Yeah.
So you have to. The scale of the issue is on one hand, we're never going to change our habit to move around the planet. The invention of the wheel was literally one of the crowning achievements of human development in the last 10,000 years, I guess. You know, but at the same time, you know, the invention of a product that can actually support an electric future is really critical. That's what we're here about. We just want to make electric cars more successful and save costs every mile. It's a simple request. It's just very difficult to achieve. But with the partners we have, we're doing it.
But this, you're solving a problem. I've just broadly, I think, done the maths. About 9 billion tons of rubber floating around our atmosphere on an annual basis.
9 billion kilos.
I'm sorry, but that is a scary number.
9 billion kilos.
Kilos, that's what I meant. What did I say? Tons. Oh, well, yeah. Sorry, yeah. Kilos. But it's still a hell of a lot, right?
Yeah, that's what will come off on average of every tire that's currently running. Some of them wear out in 6 months because they drive a lot. Some of them wear out in 3 years or longer. But cumulatively, that is basically the number. I mean, and nobody's talking about it. I think the you know, an additional wish would just wish we would talk more about the problem, because there are solutions out there. And you know, that's part of the stuff we do here. Thank you so much, guys, for Brilliant. This. Really appreciate it.
It's been outstanding. Absolutely outstanding. I have had a lot of things that you've said really resonate with me. You are somebody who is very clear in your thinking, clear in your communication, and your vision is one which anybody can understand. It's just such a powerful message, and we'd like to join with you in raising the profile of the problem and some of the solutions, because I think it is the most laudable thing that you are doing in the right way for the good of humanity without being pious about it. You're not pompous. You're not preachy. You just quietly get on and do your thing. I think what Enzo does and what you do, outstanding.
Thank you. But remember also, we're saving here costs. We're saving you the cost on the electric bill. We're saving you on the cost of the tires because they're cheaper to buy and you buy fewer of them. So ultimately, you could be altruistic or you could be greedy. It doesn't matter. We don't matter either way, because ultimately we're saving both the cost and the environment at the same time. Yeah. That is brilliant. So ultimately, this is and I think that's why we scale. That's why we're scaling quite rapidly, because we solve both the purse strings and the heartstrings.
But this, maybe I've misunderstood that. This is a good line. We should recognize that that was a good line. But the bit here, I've missed. I've naturally assumed that these tires are more expensive.
Oh.
And you're making them, making the money back over the period of time and efficiency.
No.
So you've built them cheaper.
Yeah, they're cheaper to buy. They last longer, so you buy fewer of them, and you get the bonus of saving on the electric bill. And the cost of the electric savings, depending on the country you live in, can be big enough to pay for the tires to begin with. The tires are sometimes free.
I can see why others haven't followed the business plan. Mm.
every additional tire we sell is a bump in our numbers. For the traditionals to switch to this model, they would sell fewer tires.
Go the wrong way.
Yeah, so ultimately the incentive of the industry is not to change, but we have every incentive to make sure our customers get a better ride and a better deal out of it.
Brilliant. It's not very often you come across genius, is it? But this is genius.
No, but I suppose it's the only direction that it could have ever come from, isn't it? Like you said, there's nobody comes into the tire industry. Nobody, you know, creates a premium brand within the tire industry and does things. You know, they just kind of.
We're selling these already across the UK on multiple platforms. You can go on RAC tires. You can go on Asda tires. We'll be soon on many of the other platforms as well. We're launching our own platform in June. Where you can buy them directly from us. I mean, ultimately, it's all about just simply opening the gateway everywhere so people can just acquire a better product at a more affordable price. And that allows us to scale and it allows us to tackle these complex issues.
It's not going to be long, G, before a manufacturer comes along and says, we want to fit your tires at the factory.
Why?
I mean, it's got to happen,
I couldn't possibly comment.
Oh, we maybe got an exclusive. Nearly. but it makes sense. And if given the room that you've been in with Prince William and with others, that's given you the credibility that you needed. You know, because you know, people would have thought, who's Enzo? Who's G? You know, who is this business, this company, this person? But now they know. And, you know, we think Prince William is pretty cool, but I think the rest of the world kind of likes him as well. I do think he's got a pretty good global reputation.
He's going around saying he's met G. He's so chuffed.
I'm not sure he does that.
Bet he does.
But maybe. I don't know. Prince William is, of course, a phenomenal influencer in his own right and has been hugely supportive of us. I would just say that every single customer that buys our product is part of our mission. And that's you know, we're just asking you to spend less and get a better product. We're not asking you to take any risk or anything, you know, and everyone who buys our products is helping us on the stepping stone to build our own production at large scale, to deliver even more tires to more customers and enhance their electric cars even further. And ultimately, it's a success story that rings not just to the company, but to the electric vehicle development, as we want to see every single car equipped with better products.
So, G, what we are going to do, I think, is we need a link that is going to sit on our new website. Our new website is coming. So we've got a new website. I'm going to personally commit now that my cars that I have on the drive, they're both electric, and I've got a van on the drive that's electric as well. if I need to replace any of the tires, I'm going to commit that I will buy your tires. So you can come and see. Because this is too... We talked this very morning on, you know, as we were recording today, talked on this very morning about Ella. And Ella lost her life in 2013. Her memorial has just been unveiled in Lewisham in the last couple of weeks or so. And she lost her life due to air quality, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Living on the North Circular, or South Circular, in Catford. Tire pollution will undoubtedly have contributed, maybe caused, but certainly contributed to her death because it was air quality related and she died of asthma. Yeah. And obviously PM2.5 and PM10 are definitely the causes of that. So listen, I respect the fact that the good I can do, but now you've told me it's cheaper as well and the blasted thing's going to last longer. I mean, everyone's a winner, right? I mean, I would have done it morally anyway, but now I can be morally and financially and longevatively better off.
Exactly, and that's really the message that we bring, is that it's possible to achieve improvements across the board here. It isn't that you don't have to compromise. You just have to want to work differently and embrace the opportunity. That's really what we do every single day. And and if you want them, they're on EnzoTires.com.
Love it.
We're going right there. We'll put the links in the description. Yeah. So G, you'll have to send them to us afterwards. And we'll have a conversation about the website. And just see what we can do there, because I think there's something that we should be doing here, and it's really cool. John, I think we're done, aren't we?
I think so. What I do know is that I'm going to be saving this video in my YouTube favorites and downloading it, because there's so much good stuff here that every business needs to remember. Customers come first. Quality of product, quality of experience. You know, there are some simple, basic things that many businesses have forgotten. And we could all do with watching this podcast and listening to G a bit more, because those are, they're universal truths. And I applaud you for leading your business the way you do. Magnificent.
Thank you. Thank you so much, guys. Really appreciate it.
We haven't even touched on certified B Corp, which is high standards, really high standards sustainability.
Yeah, it's
go on. You can tell us about it.
Well, we were the first company ever in the tire industry to be certified as a B Corp, and we just got recertified as well now with an even higher score, which is phenomenal. So it's part of that process, and I think that, you know, ultimately the way that we're seen and how we react in the industry, you know, what's the other famous B Corps out there? Ben and Jerry's ice cream and Patagonia. You know, these are the brands that we kind of aspire to on many different levels to emulate and learn from. And I think that ultimately, you know, as we move forward on this planet, as it spins around its axis every single day, there's just more that each one of us can do. And so if you have the opportunity and you have a bit of grit and stay in the game a day longer, you might just get lucky as well.
What I want to know is why aren't Formula E cars running Enzo tires? That's what I want to know. We need a campaign, I feel.
Well, you have to pay to do that. So they don't buy any tires. You have to pay to do that.
They've got to do the morally right thing, G, and put the right tires on those wagons.
Well, I would be very happy if they did.
Me too.
And me too. And that is a great place to end. Guys, listen, I cannot encourage you enough to kind of go over and check out Enzo Tires. Everybody's going to buy tires at some point in their life, be it your family, your kids. You know, I don't know, we haven't talked about whether these tyres are available for ICE engines, but I guess if the same tyre size is available on your car...
If it fits, you can buy as many as you want. Absolutely. And some of our customers are equipping them on both, and that's okay. We're not against you using our products to enhance your ICE vehicle either. We just focus on making them great for electric cars, but they're great for every vehicle.
Absolutely. So you can be sustainable even with your old ICE vehicle by extending the range of that vehicle and polluting the world less with all those 9 billion kilos of blooming rubber. That's a mental number. There we go.
Does that mean you can go put an Enzo on a Ferrari? I think it's time I went.
I guess. Don't know which one, but probably good.
Ah, superb. So
might have to change the wheels, but there we go. Well, guys, this has been fun, and clearly we could go on and on and on and on. It might mean that we have to have G back. And so you tell us, do you want to hear more from G? Because he seems to be changing the world one tire at a time. And it is quite a fabulous thing. It's been a joy to get to know G today and to learn so much, so much. We've even got the skinny on Prince William. He is, in fact, as annoyingly nice as he seems to be. As is this guy, quite honestly. Annoyingly good, annoyingly good-looking, annoyingly
young.
Big-hearted, brilliant. Annoyingly young-looking. anyway, there we go. We've got to accept that we come second best every now and again, and this is one of those days, but... What a guy, what a business, what a solution to a really big problem. G, we're really grateful for all that you've shared with us today and for your ingenuity and innovation that you've brought to our industry to make a difference. And it just behoves us to shout about it lots and lots so that everybody else can benefit. Thanks everybody, guys, for listening. You'll see all the links in the chat and until next time, you can always check out all of the other podcasts, of course, the EV Cafe Takeaway Podcast on the EV Cafe website. Go there. You can also see in the very near future, and probably by the time you're listening to this, you'll be able to see lots of information about tires and about vehicles that you can lease. You can even do some calculations as to which one works best for you. So go there and find out all of that, and we'll see you next time. Thanks, everybody, and have a great day.
Thank you.